Welcome back to Security for Legal SaaS. I'm Alice.
And I am. So, episode 21, Multi-Factor Authentication, or MFA. Alice, we spent the last few episodes on passwords, sessions, tokens, and OAuth. This feels like the natural next step. What happens when a password isn't enough?
Exactly. And the short answer is, a password is never enough on its own. We talked in episode 17 about how passwords are stored using hashing, and in episode 14 we covered credential stuffing, attackers taking leaked passwords from one breach and trying them everywhere else. MFA exists because no matter how well you store a password, you can't control whether the user reuses it on a site that gets breached tomorrow. So you add a second lock to the door.
Right. So what counts as a factor here?
There are three categories. Something you know, that's your password or a PIN. Something you have, a physical object like your phone or a hardware key. And something you are, a biometric like your fingerprint or face scan. True MFA means combining factors from at least two different categories. Two passwords is not MFA. A password plus a code from an app on your phone? That qualifies, because the password is something you know and the phone is something you have.
Ugh, that makes sense. So what are the common ways people implement that second factor?
The most common today is TOTP, time-based one-time passwords. Those six-digit codes that change every 30 seconds from apps like Google Authenticator or Authy. When you set it up, the server creates a shared secret and shows you a QR code. You scan it with the app. From then on, both the server and your app independently calculate the same code from the secret plus the current time. At login, you type the code to prove you have the device with the secret on it.
And that's pretty solid, right?
It's better than nothing. Far better. But it has a real weakness. The code can be phished. Imagine an attacker sets up a fake login page that looks exactly like your legal SaaS platform. You type your password and your six-digit code. The attacker's server captures both in real time and immediately submits them to the real server. The code is valid for 30 seconds. Plenty of time for an automated relay. So TOTP protects you against someone who stole your password from a database dump. It does not protect you against a sophisticated phishing page that intercepts your login in real time.
That's a bit unsettling. What about those push notifications, where your phone buzzes and you just tap approve?
Push-based MFA, like you'd see with Duo or Microsoft Authenticator, it's more convenient than typing codes, and it's slightly harder to phish because there's no code to intercept. But it introduced a new kind of attack called MFA fatigue. The Uber breach in September 2022 is the textbook case. An attacker bought stolen credentials for an Uber contractor from the dark web. The account had push MFA, so the attacker couldn't just log in. Instead, they sent over 40 push notifications to the contractor's phone in 30 minutes. Then they messaged the contractor on WhatsApp pretending to be Uber IT, saying, "Approve the notification to make it stop." The contractor did. The attacker was in.
40 notifications. That's social engineering on top of a technical attack.
Exactly. And it worked. Once inside, the attacker found admin credentials in a script file and escalated to full control of Uber's cloud systems. Since then, vendors have added number matching, where the login screen shows a two-digit number and you have to type it into the push notification on your phone, proving you can see both screens. That blocks the fatigue attack because you can't just tap blindly.
Right. So where do hardware keys and passkeys fit in? I keep hearing passkeys are the future.
They are. Hardware security keys, like a YubiKey, and passkeys both use a standard called WebAuthn, developed by the W3C and the FIDO Alliance. Here's the key difference from TOTP. There's no shared secret. When you register the key, it creates a unique pair of cryptographic keys. The private key stays on your device and never leaves. The public key goes to the server. When you log in, the server sends a challenge, your key signs it, and the server checks the signature. No code to type, no code to intercept.
Yeah, but what stops a phishing site from using that same process?
This is the clever part. The key checks the website's domain before signing anything. If you're on the real site, legalplatform.com, the key signs the challenge. If you're on a fake site, log in legalplatform.com, the key refuses because the domain doesn't match what was registered. It's not just harder to fish, it's cryptographically impossible. The maths won't work on the wrong domain.
That's a meaningful difference. But hardware keys, people lose them. What happens then?
That's exactly where recovery flows come in. And honestly, recovery is the weakest link in any MFA system. If your recovery mechanism is, we'll send you an SMS code, then an attacker who can SIM swap your phone number can bypass your hardware key. You've installed a vault door and left the window open. The best practice is to register two independent second factors at setup. Two hardware keys stored in different locations, or a hardware key and a passkey synced to your platform account. If both are lost, the platform should require an out-of-band identity verification, a phone call with your firm's IT admin, or, in some cases, physical verification. Not just click this email link.
Right. Let me ask the business case question. For a legal SaaS vendor, is MFA just a security feature, or is there a professional obligation here?
It's both. Upon Model Rule 1.6c, which we first mentioned back in Episode 1, requires lawyers to make reasonable efforts to prevent unauthorized access to client information. A recent ABA survey found that fewer than half of solo and small firm lawyers use MFA at all. Meanwhile, cyber insurance carriers now require MFA on all accounts as a precondition for coverage. If a legal SaaS platform doesn't enforce MFA, it's actively making it harder for its lawyer customers to meet their ethical obligations and their insurance requirements.
So the vendor should enforce it, not just offer it.
Enforce it for everyone. TOTP as the baseline. It's free, every phone can do it. Passkeys as the recommended upgrade for firms handling high sensitivity matters. And design the recovery flow carefully. Never let SMS-only recovery defeat a hardware key enrollment. Log every MFA event. Enrollment, verification, failed attempts, recovery. Because auditors and regulators will ask. There's a full comparison table of all of the MFA methods with their strengths and weaknesses in the episode notes.
Quick real-world reminder for anyone who needs motivating. Colonial Pipeline 2021. The attackers got in through a single VPN password on a dormant account. No MFA. That was the entire attack surface for an infrastructure company that supplies nearly half the fuel for the US East Coast.
One password. No second factor. Basic MFA would have stopped it entirely. And the Uber case shows that even when you have MFA, the type matters. Push notifications failed against social engineering. Phishing-resistant MFA, passkeys, hardware keys, would have been immune.
Next episode, single sign-on, SAML, and enterprise identity. How law firms centralize authentication across all their SaaS platforms.
Until then, I'm Alice.
And I'm Dan.
Security for Legal SaaS is a series written with AI assistance. Alice and Dan are AI-generated voices. No professional advice here, just education.